You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, feminist-inspired radio brought to you by CKUT and the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy. The Dragon Root has two genders and symbolizes the diversity of every body and every mind on the gender spectrum. Tune in every Tuesday morning from 8:39 on 90.3 FM or ckut.ca/listen. You can also pick up and choose from our archives at center2110.org. We bring you reports from the Blueprint Radio Project on gendered violence, live tunes from feminists, queer, trans, and gender-aware musical guests, and interviews about a wide array of social justice issues examined through a gender-perceptive lens. Today on Dragon Root, we're bringing you a piece from the Vav Gallery, and later on in the show, we'll give you a preview of an upcoming show with Suzanne Cardalion about her film Grandma's Tattoos. But first up is Hannah with the Vav Gallery.
The Vav Gallery is a student-run exhibition space at Concordia University that seeks to reflect the excellence and diversity of artworks created by students to both the university community and the public at large. As part of a special programming, the Vav Gallery is presenting an exhibition titled Genderqueer. The show will feature works by artists who identify within gender nonconforming, trans, two-spirit, genderqueer, or otherwise gender-fluid identities. The exhibition will be taking place from Monday, April 29th to Friday, May 10th, with the vernissage being held on Friday, May 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. In the studio today, we are with the show's curator. Welcome to the program. So could you tell us a little bit about how the show came about?
Yeah, basically myself and my friend, my name's Javelin, and my current co-director, Sam Unger, we decided we wanted to program a show that was specifically by and for trans and gender creative non-conforming people. And we had an opportunity in our programming, an open spot that we thought it would be good for, and we sent a call out, just kind of just test the water, see if anyone was interested, and people were. We got responses, lots of them, and it was a really tough decision to make, but we selected some amazing work, so here it is.
Can you tell us a little bit about the pieces that are going to be exhibited?
Yeah, they're very diverse in medium and style and perspective. People are talking about a lot of different things, but generally all are incorporating some experience of gender and nonconformity or creativity in their piece. In total, there are 9 artists in this show. Their names are Mark Shepherd, Sam Unger, Elise Dressner, Frankie Evans, Jordan Davidson, Edwin Isford, Iris Moore, Fanny Gadois, and Jeremy Sander. And they are all really, really excellent artists. If you want, I can tell you a little bit about some of the pieces. We have a print by Elise Dressner that's called the Misandry Diagram, which is, misandry is the hatred or distrust of men. We have an amazing animated video by Iris Moore that's kind of following the day of a person who wakes up and gets to decide what body parts they want to wear that day. It follows them through their day and how they fall in love and the incredible role reversal that happens that night. And then we have a photo series by Mark Shepherd who is depicting themselves as the kind of grown-up version of the person that they wanted to be when they were a child. So it's all of these fabulous photo shoots, like glamour and high beauty femme, and all set against the backdrop of Newfoundland, which is just like unreal. It looks like a fairy tale.
Wow, those sound really fascinating. And did the artists work collaboratively, or were they more individual pieces?
They actually all applied separately, and we kind of paired them all together for the purpose of this show. So it was we're still yet to see. The show hasn't gone up yet, so we don't know exactly how it's going to turn out. There's always room for surprises, but we've all met and discussed the show, and everyone seems really on board for the collective effort.
And what do you think is the importance and the power of exploring and expressing gender through art?
Honestly, I cannot overstate the importance of this. Not to be bleak, but as a gender creative and trans person, or as gender creative and trans people, we're living in a world that is often openly hostile to our genders and to our identities. And it's erasing us, it's denying us rights, privileges, and liminally and discreetly, it's calling us ugly, or that we somehow are wrong, or that we need to fix ourselves. Trans and gender creative people all need and deserve an outlet to express themselves, because without it, we wouldn't exist. The fact that we are even sitting here and having this interview right now is kind of miraculous, and is really in large part due to the fact that there have been people that have come before us, gender creative trans people, gender outlaws, that paved the way and made this possible. And without them, I don't know how we would have ever had this opportunity. They're too numerous to count and really often not remembered. Again, not to overstate the case, but we're literally fighting for our lives. And this art show may not seem like a dire life-saving service, and it may not directly be one for everyone, but for someone it is. For the person who comes into our gallery and sees someone that reminds them of themselves, shows them that there are ways that this world, in this world, that you can be trans or gender creative and feel beautiful while doing that without conforming, that person is why we're doing this. And because one day, not long ago, we were that person, all of us, in the show. So
you talked a little bit about hostility and, I guess, like aggressiveness towards trans or gender nonconforming people. Do you find that the rest of the art world is equally as, I guess, unwelcoming?
Well, I don't want to say the art world specifically, but yes, I mean, first and foremost, this exhibition is about giving space to the artists who are in it. And it's never easy to be a genderqueer, trans, genderqueative, non-normative type of person, in especially getting access, in regard to getting access to art spaces, especially ones that are occupied mostly by cisgender or straight or more mainstream artists or types of art. And so we just really wanted to create an opportunity to show people that that doesn't always have to be the case, and to demonstrate the fact that it doesn't just happen naturally, that if we want this to happen, we have to make an effort to make it happen. And that's unfortunate, but it's also kind of the beauty of it, because we get to do it with intention.
You kind of spoke to this already, but is there anything else that you were hoping to achieve with the exhibition? Or are you hoping to use this as, like, activism or an educational tool?
Of course, we're always trying to spread awareness and educate people, but, I mean, ultimately we're all responsible for educating ourselves, and we're the best at knowing how to educate ourselves. We really want people to come to the show and to learn about it, but ultimately we're trying to just create a space where these people have a voice, and if people come and, like, learn something from that, fantastic. But we're not just there for other people, we're there for ourselves. And as far as like activism and like this being a form of, like, public display of our gender, I mean, it is. But people who are gender creative, gender nonconforming, trans people, especially ones who identify as femme, are constantly being pushed out of the light. And the fact that any of us are there showing our work is in and of itself a form of activism. For us, activism is existing every single day.
From what I understand, this is the first time that the VAV Gallery has put on a show specifically about gender creativity. So I was wondering if you were hoping to have like a show like this more frequently.
I mean, yes. The short answer is absolutely yes. The way that the VAV Gallery works as a student-run gallery through Concordia is that every year the gallery co-directors change. So actually my tenure as one of the co-directors this year is now ending, and we've just hired new people. So I would love and hope that the new co-directors will continue this tradition. I'm calling it the first annual genderqueer show. And I think they will, but you never know. Every year it changes, and it's kind of up to the new co-directors to carry on that tradition. So I really hope they will.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And you said there are 9 artists in the show, so I'm really curious about the logistics of putting the show together. So it seems like a lot of different people to coordinate.
It is. There's a reason I did it at the end of this year, not at the beginning, when I'm a lot better at this job and kind of know what I'm doing. It's tough. You do this job for a year and you get really good at it. Like about, you know, at month 11 of 12. but yeah, we send a call out for anyone who is making work about gender creative experiences or experiences around gender in general. We didn't want to make it a specific requirement that people were gender non-normative, gender creative, or trans, but it turns out that everyone who we like selected for the show was. And yeah, the logistics, I mean, it's a lot of artists. 9 people is a lot of artists. It's more than average, but we have been, you know, meeting a lot, talking about the space. We're lucky enough to have a really agreeable group that just really is excited to show their work. I feel like people are kind, like the artists are kind of in awe that this show is even happening, which is beautiful and also kind of like, well, yeah, of course it's happening. Like, I wouldn't let this year go by without something like this happening. But yeah, everyone just is very happy to be doing it and like super easygoing and agreeable. So, I mean, like I said, the setup is still this weekend and the show opens on Monday, but there's still things that could go wrong, but I don't think it's going to. I think it's going to be great.
I was also wondering if you know of any other galleries in Montreal or in the Montreal area that have put on shows specifically dedicated to gender creative artists.
Yeah, absolutely. There's the Lost and Child Powerhouse Gallery, which I have not specifically had the pleasure of getting to work with, but I have always seen them and their programming and their programming of gender creative and trans people to be very strong, and always been an important facet of their mandate and programming. And yeah, I think I'm so glad that they are out there and keep getting to do that, because it's important that somebody in the city is all about that. Mm-hmm. Another great space is Studio XX. I actually have had the pleasure of working with them this past year in their annual festival, HTML, which is about women and programming. And yeah, I can't recommend them more highly. They are just very, very committed to working with women and anyone in the femme identity, really. And especially to do with like technology and the future. No, but they're great. They are so welcoming and so helpful and just like a super good group of people who care deeply. Of course, I have to say there's the VAP Gallery. This is our second show this year that has been specifically about gender or queer issues specifically. Earlier this year we had a show called Queer Partnerships, which was partnered with Aaron Silver's new course at Concordia, Queer Partnerships. And yeah, I know that Aaron is teaching that course again next year, and so I'm hoping that it will also become an annual tradition at the VAF. And the VAF Gallery also is the host of the annual HIV/AIDS art exhibition. So while our mandate isn't specifically about gender and queer issues, as much as I wish that it was, we always manage to incorporate a lot of that into our programming.
And I guess my final question for you is, what kind of audience were you hoping to reach with this exhibition?
Short answer, absolutely everyone. The long answer is, it's people who, I mean, who can or cannot, but especially people who can come and see themselves in this work. Or maybe you don't see yourself in this work, but maybe you see someone that reminds you of someone you wanted to be when you were a kid, or reminds you of a friend that you really like, or just shows you that you can be really weird and really beautiful at the same time. Being trans, being a woman, being femme, having all these like really confusing identities happening at once, and people telling you that they're wrong or confused or ugly is hard, is so hard. And every single day you like have to fight to stay strong and believe in yourself. And if anyone can come and see the show and feel encouraged by that and feel like they might be able to have a voice through that, or use that to build a voice for themselves, like that's why we're doing it, and that's our audience.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I wish you the best of luck with setting up and
thank you.
And so the exhibition will take place in the VAV Gallery, which is located in the Concordia University Fine Arts Building on 1395 René Lévesque. The exhibition will take place from Monday, April 29th to Friday, May 10th, and the vernissage, again, is on Friday, May the 3rd.
Yeah, and we're going to have performances that night, so come, some free alcohol, see some performances, and experience genderqueer.
And so it's from 6 to 9 p.m.?
6 to 9 p.m., René Lévesque and Crescent.
All right, thank you so much.
Next up, Michael interviews Suzanne Cardallian about her film Grandma's Tattoos. Cardallian makes a journey into her own family to investigate the terrible truth behind her late grandmother's odd tattoos. Her grandmother's mystery is slowly unveiled, family taboos are broken down, and Suzanne exposes the bigger story, the fate of the Armenian woman driven out of the Ottoman Turkey during the First World War.
Tomorrow marks the 98th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, which commemorates the nearly 1.5 million civilians killed in what historians refer to as the first genocide of the 20th century. Implemented on April 24, 1915, the genocide began with the arrest, detainment, and execution of Armenian cultural leaders and intellectuals under the directive of Ottoman Empire's Minister of the Interior, Talat Pasha. Armenian men, women, children, and the elderly were rounded up by Ottoman soldiers, forcing them on death marches through the desert. Many died of hunger, others raped or murdered by Turk, Kurdish, and other tribal collaborators. Armenian women were the recipients of a particular host of horrors, victims of indiscriminate sexual crimes and kidnappings. Those who survived lived lives as slaves, were given Muslim names, and had their hands and faces tattooed, as was the custom of tribesmen at the time. Today I'm joined by Ms. Suzanne Khardalyan, whose film Grandma's Tattoos documents her personal journey to lift the shroud of secrecy surrounding her grandmother's story of survival. By uncovering the history behind the tattoos adorning her hands and face, we gain an insight not only upon the experience of women during the Armenian Genocide through the particular fate that befell her grandmother, but also learn how women in particular are the recipients and targets of sexual violence and degradation during times of genocide. Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship that you shared with your grandmother?
I don't know where to start, honestly, because I should say in the beginning that I had no relationship to my grandmother. That was the weird thing, you know, because my grandma was a very weird person, and she hated physical contact. So as a child, I remember her very cold person, and I used to compare myself with other children and their relationship to grandmothers, how they were hugged, how they were doing things together, how I did this in the weekend with my grandma, but I had no relationship with her because she was she never reached me, and I couldn't reach her, in return. And the funny thing is that when I talked to my family, the thing is that everybody had the same feeling that somehow she didn't love us, and we didn't love her either. And that's the essence, or not the essence, that's the somehow... the question that the film Grandma Tattoo starts with, why was she like that? Why did she hate us? Especially girls. She hated girls, you know? And that was, as a child, you don't understand it. So I say, she didn't hug me, she never kissed me, she never smiled at me, so I didn't do either.
And at what point did you find that there was more behind her demeanor and her disposition that you needed to find out for yourself?
Well, unfortunately, very, very late, when she had passed away for so many years, and my regret today, of course, is that how couldn't I see it? Because we lived very close to each other. We were in the same apartment building, and we would meet every day. But somehow she never existed for me, for my sisters. And I even remember when I started making the film that, my God, I had forgotten that she had tattoos. Why? Somehow we had cleaned her, you know, made her a blank page. And I guess, my guess is that because in the family there was such a crashing silence that you weren't supposed to talk about certain things. And the silence made it such that I had forgotten about her tattoos, for example. I had forgotten about, I had no interest in putting any questions to her. And of course, when you're a teenager, my God, I mean, you have other things in your mind, grandma, what? But later on, because she died in 1987, and why? My question is, why did we never put the question? And it was only by accident when, during my research for this film, I came across some fantastic photos. These are small, you know, portraits that that are in file cases where I saw tattooed women, not one, not two, but dozens and hundreds of them. And I was shocked, you know. I never understood what was the meaning. And then something bothered me when I was going through them. And it took me a while, you know, before I made the connection that, yeah, those tattoos, I have seen them. I have seen them. They were on my grandma's face and on my, on her hands.
Can you describe what the tattoos look like for our audience?
Well, these are blue, kind of bluish, blackish signs, different signs. Some are the Ottoman flag, with the crescent and the star. Others are kind of weird symbolic circles, triangles, multiplication signs. Kind of cross. You could see half sun. You could see some kind of floral things. So there are different things. You could see a calm, which I never understood what does it mean. So these are different kind of tattoos that tribal people in the Ottoman Empire was very much a tradition. If you think about it today, is the modern border Syria, Turkey, all the way going up to Iraq, and these are Kurdish, Turkish, Kizilbash, and Arab tribal tradition that then was, of course, imposed on the Armenian women and children.
Mm-hmm. And so, where did your journey take you after discovering these photographs and you sort of rediscovering?
Right.
What the experience
of your...
You know,
what was interesting? Let me tell you first.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio. You just heard an interview with Suzanne Cardallian. The rest of the interview will be played in an upcoming show. Tune in next week at the same time for more gender-powered radio.